welcome back. If you're interested in opening a salon in 2025 and learning about what it takes versus the years prior, we're about to dive in.
Let's get to it.
Listen up.
All right. So we've opened 3 salon locations in the past 10 years, and we're in the current moment of expanding our Wayne location. We're doubling in size there. So we know a few things about getting salons open, and we know that things have changed. And today we just want to talk about what changes we've seen. And if you are somebody who's interested in opening, we can break down some of the challenges that you're likely going to face.
Yeah.
I think one of the biggest things to talk about is how, like, a budget back 5-10 years ago is completely different to a budget that you're going to need to have today. There's just so many rises in cost and opening and insurances, taxes, everything's just way different.
Yeah. So this research says that it's always been like a major expense, but it's more unpredictable now. And I feel like we kind of felt that we recently, I mean, pretty much, I don't know if you guys at Newtown Square, but like at Wayne and then of course Malvern, we've had a big increase with real estate taxes. And something that you can't really ever prepare yourself for. So it's really up to like the landlord, I guess, to be communicative about that and like being able to work with you.
Yeah, but that's, even if you're with a, even if you own your building and you're not with a landlord, there's not much you can do about taxes. Right. Like yeah. They are what they are.
You're right.
And you're going to just pay them. So,
yeah. It's hard. I think it's hard for us now because like our costs are always going up with products and stuff and the inventory and the overhead that we have to keep. It's kind of like you want to grow your salon, but when you're growing everything else. So you have to grow your inventory. You have to, you know, keep your salon stocked more. And like, that's a big hefty cost that I feel like not a lot of people think about when they want to open a salon.
Absolutely. I feel like now more than ever, the profit margins are slim. Like they're very tight. And unless you have a very strong understanding of the financials and what it takes to own and operate the business and have a strategy in place of how you're going to continue to support the needs of the business in the coming years, you know, that can either set you up for success or failure really quick.
Well, it's super important to be able to read your P&Ls, make sure you're actually getting P&Ls every single month and having a really good bookkeeper if it's not yourself, staying on top of your numbers, knowing your budgets, knowing, you know, what your next 3 months looks like. Mm-hmm. Like you need to be prepared for it because it can definitely shut you down pretty quick.
Yeah, for sure. The one thing that I'll mention that I think is a positive that we're experiencing right now is the support that we're getting in the fit out of our Wayne location.
Yeah.
And I can't say this is not the case in every scenario, but if you are leasing a space and you have a landlord, it seems to be a trend now for them to help provide what they call TI, which is tenant improvements. So there's a lot more flexibility on those numbers now than what there was in the past. I would say all 4 projects that we've done in our history have never given us TI support the way we're getting it now.
Yeah. I think it's situational too. Like I know with this space that we just acquired, like they had to renovate it anyway. And then another space that we were looking at, it kind of also needed to be renovated. So I don't know if that's like the situation or what it is, but
like the norm, yeah.
Would have been nice if we could have taken advantage of that in the past with the other location.
Absolutely.
So there's a plus in that aspect. I just saw a post on Instagram and it was a salon owner asking her team how much she thought they spent
payroll taxes
in payroll taxes. Did you see that?
Yep.
And it was like $200,000 in payroll tax just to keep them employed.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not trying to scare you. We're just trying to like prepare let you know what
we're this not is trying all to scare about. You. We're just trying to prepare you.
The evolving workforce and hiring struggles back then. Hiring stylists and assistants, front desk staff was always a challenge, but talent was more stable. Now, many stylists prefer booth rental, suite rental, or freelance work over traditional salon employment. Finding and retaining loyal commission-based team members requires offering better incentives, which we know, like education, career growth, strong salon culture. I mean, at this point, if you're not actively working on your company culture, like you're already behind.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to put themselves in a toxic work culture on top of, you know, not getting any benefits, not having competitive commission, 401k, things like that.
I mean, it's weird because for the past 2 years, I feel like so many industry experts have been talking about this, like, great divide or what's coming with commission salons, and we're in it now. Like, mm-hmm. now it's basically survival of the fittest. Mm-hmm. Like, if you are not providing the top-notch experience, you're being extremely competitive with the benefits that you offer, the commission percentages, all of that stuff, you're not going to survive.
Yeah. Not only just that, I think it's really important that we are competitive with price. Like, just think about all the overhead employees that aren't, like, commissioned, that are bringing money into the salon. Like, think about front desk, apprentices. Like, back then, you could get away with paying minimum wage and they would, you know, depend on tips. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of, like, cringe to me then, because, like, we never did that minimum wage, right? We always paid more. But I, even today, it's like everything's increasing. Like, even states are requiring minimum wage. Some states have $15 minimum wages, and, you know, that's all strictly overhead. Like, mm-hmm. that's a lot of money, especially if you have a larger salon that has a lot of support staff. In that sense, that's a lot of money.
It is.
Why do you think that is? Like, do you think it's because corporate offers, like, $20 an hour? Like, corporate companies can offer $20 an hour with benefits?
Or, I think that's part of it. I also think part of it is age. Like, I feel like in our setting, like, we don't just hire shampoo girls that are, like, 15 years old that can come in and, like, we are hiring, like,
professionals
that are really career oriented, and, like, you can't just say, okay, I'm gonna pay you $750. Mm-hmm, like, it right. just doesn't fly.
But I feel like that's still even a challenge for us. So, like, I can only imagine, like, the smaller scale salons who, like, right. are paying, like, close to a minimum wage, like, how much they're struggling to find people to help out, you know?
That's just it. It's a huge challenge. And I feel like, you know, it's like, these salons are, they're competing with each other. Like, they're trying to get the best people in and the best support, but yet they have to pay higher. There's no way around it.
Yeah.
So, like, that's went up a lot since when we first opened our first salon 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and economics plays a big role in that too. And I think people, I think a lot of people don't tip as much anymore as they used to back then, because prices were cheaper. Like, you could get your hair done way cheaper than you could today. So people had a little bit of extra money to throw towards tipping. And today it's a little bit more scarce from what I'm hearing. Like, when I survey the girls,
yeah.
You know, tips were definitely bigger years ago.
Yep. I think it's difficult. I think that you see Target hiring, you know, for, what is it? I don't know, $17 an
Chick-fil-A.
Hour.
Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
You could go work the drive-through for $20 an hour. Mm-hmm. Like, why would you want to go and work on your feet all day long shampooing heads when you're not making that good money?
It's really competitive. It is. It's so hard right now.
The next thing is demand for technology. Back then, booking software and social media were helpful, but they weren't essential. Now clients expect seamless online booking, automated confirmations, digital payment options. Salons that lag in tech adoption may struggle to compete. And this couldn't be more true.
And may all struggle, of that.
They may struggle. Put it this way. As a consumer, this is me as a consumer. I won't book a dentist appointment because I can't do it online.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at. Like, mm-hmm. I am overdue for a dentist appointment. But if I can't schedule it online at 11:30 p.m. tonight, it's just not happening. In addition, I'm rolling out of the house with my cell phone. So I want Apple Pay.
Yeah.
If you don't have Apple Pay, we're going to have a problem. I probably can't pay you today.
Yeah.
So there's just, like, all of these.
God, you're harsh.
Well, this is the truth, Ted. This is the truth.
But I'm saying it is. But all that technology costs salon owners a lot of money to do that. Yeah. It costs money to have all that digital stuff. That's not just something you can just create on your own on your computer and it's a free service. It doesn't work like that.
Back to, like, these operational costs. Subscriptions from different software companies do you think? What do you think we pay a month in subscriptions to software?
A lot.
I mean,
I don't even want to know.
A lot.
I'm just gonna sit this one out.
I'm gonna say like thousands.
Yeah,
I'm gonna say thousands. It's gotta be, just to sustain what we're trying to do. It's not even trying to, like, propel us forward, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
And to what you just said with her, like, we're millennials and we're that way. We're talking about these generations, like, that's how they grew up. What's a credit card? No. I don't have a credit card. Yeah. I have a phone.
Yeah. No, you know? I agree. I use my Apple Pay for a lot, too.
Yeah.
I wouldn't, like, wait, not go somewhere that doesn't take Apple Pay, but Heather, I mean...
That night that I went into El Granillo to pick up my dinner,
yeah,
did you see me like struggling over there?
I didn't know what the hell was going on. I thought you were being weird because I was at dinner with mommy and you weren't invited.
No, it was because they didn't take Apple Pay and I didn't have anything else. And I could have walked over and been like, Dad, give me your credit card.
You knew he would have paid for it. He wanted to pay for your dinner anyway.
But literally, I was like, oh my God, like I'm standing here without payment. I had to call Will, get him to send me a picture of our credit card.
Oh my God.
And they had to process it because I just assumed that they had Apple Pay and they didn't.
Huh.
And that's where we're at today. So yeah, it makes you uncomfortable. Like,
so I get that. I totally get it. It's definitely appreciate it, but it costs money for all these services. Mm-hmm, so like someone like a mom and pop restaurant like that, they might not have the extra money to put it, you know, a
credit card machine. Or the bigger thing is that they don't see the significance behind it.
True.
Very They're true. Like, well, I don't need that. Well, yeah. In today's world, yeah. You do need it. And yeah. I mean, it's everything. It's the way we schedule our apprentices and our support staff. All You're of right. that's digital. It's things that we have to pay for monthly.
I think about it too. Like what you just said, I won't even book a dinner reservation somewhere where I can't just go on like OpenTable or and just order, like schedule it.
Yeah.
It drives me crazy if I have to call. Any type of
like friction in the process is like a major turnoff. Because we're so focused on like instant gratification and just getting things when we want it.
And we're also so easily distracted today that it's like you're in the middle of doing it and then an email pops in and you're like, oh, what's that? And then you just completely forget about whatever you were doing.
Did you see that my story the other day? It was like
all the time. Yeah.
It's like, oh, hey, I read your email at a stoplight on the way to dropping off my kids to school and I just remembered 4 months later.
Like, literally.
Oh, my God.
Yep. The next one's a big one. This is something that Britt Siva talks a lot about with client expectations and perceived value. So, changing client expectations and service trends. Back then, we were more focused on traditional services like single process color, traditional foils, haircuts. And now clients see customized high-end experiences with options like scalp health treatments, bond-building services. Salons need to adapt quickly to trends or risk losing clients to independent stylists who will offer more hyper-personalized services.
This is something that we've been hyper aware of for about two and a half years. This goes hand in hand with perceived value, guest experience. People are down to spend the money, but they want the experience to follow. And I have to say, this has been very difficult for us. Like we would consider ourselves luxury high end, but consistency has been difficult to manage across all three locations and making sure that every single guest is getting a consistent high end luxury experience. And I think that's key.
Well, even from a stylist standpoint, like it was so much easier to build a book like a couple years ago compared to now. So like, think of that as a salon owner, you're taking on that burden for, you know, your entire team. You know, you're reliable for helping them build them book. I know it's not all you, the salon owner, but if you're not providing some type of way to help them, they're going to leave you. They're not going to stay.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's exactly. And that's what the new graduates, you know, they're in a climate now where they have options. They're being very critical about where they go and who they end up building their career with. And, you know, I feel like we often get asked about our education support and, you know, they've heard things about our apprentice program, which is why they're attracted to us. But I feel like it's just the stakes are high and the expectations are fierce and you have to show up really putting in the time and effort and energy to make sure that your commission salon is competitive, because otherwise you're going to get eaten up alive.
Let me tell you something. Let me tell you something. I probably like wouldn't have done this like now. Like, do you know what I mean? Like if you were to ask me to open a salon today, I'd probably tell you I'm good. I'm actually great. Thank you, but no.
I'm actually considering taking all of the time and energy that I put into the business and just putting that into my social media so I can start monetizing off of it.
Like, it's wild. I mean, if you like, think about all this stuff. Like, if you were just coming into this fresh, I would be like so overwhelmed.
It's definitely overwhelming, but I mean, that's just like you roll with the times and the tides. And it's like, back then, it was overwhelming for us then. Like, we were nervous. Like, we had different issues then than you have now. But
it seems so,
I just feel like, and that's what sets people apart, like, from being a business owner. You have to take risk. You have to take, you know, you take the world, the weight of the world on your shoulders at that point when you open a business. Yeah. It's anything can happen. Anything can go wrong. But what you were saying about the clients expecting, like, so much, mm-hmm. I think that's key, too. And I think it's important to note that, like, when you are doing your pricing in your salon, like, it needs to match the experiences that you're giving. People will pay it. I'm not saying that they're not going to pay it, but if you're have these high prices and you're giving them mediocre work, they're out the door. Mm-hmm. The only way you're getting them back is if you're giving high prices and high luxury experiences. And when I say, I don't know, like, how cheap any hair salon can actually go right now, because prices for everything has gone up. I just read a thing on like the United States Economic 2024 stats, and it basically said that in the hair industry, a lot of products have gone up even 60% mm-hmm. just to have them in your salon. So how can you not increase prices? How, like, I don't know how, like, you're charging these cheap prices to go get a haircut and a color done and actually making money. Mm-hmm. You might be breaking even.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you want to make money and have some kind of profit, I think it needs, your services need to match your pricing, and your pricing needs to match, like, what you're paying for products and overhead and everything.
Yeah. I have to say, I think that the middlemen are out. Like, here's what you're getting. You're either getting economy or you're getting business class.
I agree.
Those are the two options that you have. It's either I'm going to pay $12 for my haircut and I don't care what it looks like and I have zero interest in the experience, or I'm going to pay $300 and I want it to be four seasons from the start.
100%. I agree with that.
Yeah. This next one, I think you mentioned earlier, the uncertainty of consumer spending habits. So back then, clients were more likely to book high ticket services without hesitation and as often as needed. Now, economic fluctuations, some clients are cutting back on luxury services, spacing out their appointments. Salons need to offer flexible pricing structures. And that's it.
I agree with that. And I think that the hairstyles have changed too.
Yeah, like the trends.
Yes, the trends have changed. Like, they're not as simple as they were back in like the 90s when everybody wanted the Christina Aguilera stripey highlights. Like, okay, just throw foils in someone's head and you're done. It looks great. You got what you wanted. That's not the look anymore. Mm-mm. Everybody wants these different natural like looks, like you were born with like this, you know, grow out seamless, and these beautiful highlights on your ends, and like that takes time and effort and more product, and it's different than it was just foiling a whole head and making sure someone was happy.
And the longevity of it, like, you have to figure if the clients are spacing out their appointments, you have to get that much more new guests to fill the spaces you have those openings now.
That's a key.
Yeah.
Yep, that's a key, because I feel like that is something that's different now. It used to be every client was 6 to 8 weeks. Some were four. But everybody was in every other month to get their service done. And now it's like
8 to 12 weeks.
4 months. Like,
even 12 to 16, I'd say.
I mean, I would say right now, I probably get my color done 3 times a year, max. Like, that's... God,
you guys are lucky.
See? All right, and the last one's a loaded one, mental and emotional toll on owners. Back then, owning salon was always demanding, but there was more separation between work and personal life. Now, the pressure to be constant available on social media, manage teams in a changing workforce, and adapt to evolving business trends can lead to burnout. Prioritizing mental wellness, I hate that word, but delegation and work-life balance is more important than ever. And I mean, obviously we can relate to that one.
I mean, this is the biggest one.
We just talked about this.
This, like, is the biggest one.
And I want to preface this, like, I don't think, it's not so much like, I feel like we want to like master this. I don't want to say like, oh, like it's so annoying. Like, I feel like our goal is to master all of these things. Like, I don't want anyone to think like, oh, they just like bitch about what they do all the time. Like, I enjoy what we do.
Well, that's just like we were just talking about. The three of us were just away for a few days, stepped away from the salons. I wasn't with you guys. You were somewhere else, but I was somewhere else. And I, like, somebody was like, oh, I'm so sorry to bother you on vacation. And I'm just like, you don't understand. Like, as an owner, there really isn't a vacation anymore. Like, and I'm happy about that. Like, not that I'm happy, but, like, I don't mind it. I go into my vacations knowing I'm going to be working at some point. I mean, it might not be every single day, but at some point I'm going to be focused on the business again, trying to figure out what needs to be done, what I missed, who's texting me or emailing me. And that's just like a given for me. And it's not a negative in my mind. Like, yeah. This comes and goes with the positives and negatives of opening a salon, owning a salon. Like, yeah, it's, you know, you get perks.
You signed up for it,
and it's accepted for me. So I don't mind it.
Somebody who doesn't have that mentality, like, that should be a big, like,
this
is my point here. And when I say that the biggest challenge that you're going to have as becoming a salon owner in 2025 is the mental component behind it.
Yeah.
You have to go into this planning to put your team, your business, and everything else before your own needs. Mm-hmm. And if you're not somebody who's capable of doing that, do yourself a favor. You're going to save a lot of time and a lot of money, and don't do it. Prioritize you, prioritize your business, work behind the chair. There's a major difference. Not every great hairstylist is going to be a great owner. And that's something that I just think needs to be understood, because when you get in this, it's hard. It's really hard. It's emotional. It's
draining.
It's you're always reachable. Like, it could be 9 p.m. It could be 6 a.m. It could be on vacation. It could be, I just had a baby. It doesn't matter. You still need to be present with your business. And I think that that's the biggest thing. And listen, for someone like me and you, I feel like this is how we roll. We knew what we were getting into. We're open for this. We're down.
And this is why we took on partners, because we knew that we didn't have the capacity to do it all alone. Like, I wouldn't be able to open a hair salon and take all of that. And no, like, there wouldn't be a good balance. We're having my partners with me. Like, I know if I step away and I can't answer my phone today and it's blowing up, somebody's going to get it for me.
Yeah.
But I do know, in the same sense, like, all the benefits and the perks that I get of being a salon owner, there's also some other things that, like you said, you're signed up for no matter what. And I embrace it. Like, this is me. This is my brand. This is my company. These are my people. Like, I need to show up every day. There's no days off as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I hope we didn't discourage anybody from opening a salon, but I also think it's important to understand the realities behind it, because Instagram's a facade. Social media is a facade. It's not all rainbows and butterflies. In fact, a lot of it's not that. And you just need to know that going into it, I would say the biggest issue is the emotional, the mental piece of it.
And there's a lot that's out of your control. Like, you're going to get little bumps in the roads that you have no control over, like tax increases. Like, what are you going to do? Go stand at Congress and fight them? Like, it's like, no, this is what the tax increase is. It is what it is. Like, the products increase, like, everything's, you know, you were paying $12 for a tube of color. Now you're paying $17. Like, these companies, they don't want to hear it. You're the small guy. Like, so it is what it is.
Yeah, I think it's like anything, like with hair, even as like a stylist, like if you're not passionate about it, you're going to have a hard time. If you're a salon owner, you're not passionate about physically growing people, like, you're going to struggle.
Yeah, you're going to get from your company what you're willing to put into your company.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's what it comes down to.
Some advice I would give to someone who's considering doing this, right now, I would say start small. That would be my advice. If you have no experience as being a salon owner and you are looking to go out on your own and potentially build a team, I would do exactly opposite of what I did in 2014. But basically, I think that...
Why do you say that?
Because we signed a lease for a 2,200 square foot space, had to do an entire fit out with... I thought I was opening it by myself. Like, I didn't know I was going to have anybody there to work with me.
Yeah, hundreds of thousands of dollars invested out of the gate. And it was like, we got to live on a prayer and pray to God that we get some people on our team.
And listen, I say this often, that I think my blindness was a blessing then, because it worked out. And my mindset at the time was, there's no option for it not to work out. And I'm willing to work incredibly hard to do that. And in fact, I worked 40 to 50 hours behind the chair every single week for a full year without taking one dime from the business. Like, that was my reality, but I was cool with it. And that's what I think that, you know, I think 10 years later and all the experiences that I had, I would probably say start off small. If I were you, I would look for a shorter lease. Maybe it's a 2 or 3 year lease, 5 year max, take a smaller space, build it out with 2 to 3 stylists at a time. And then once you expand that space, then you start to talk about what's next.
Right.
That would be my advice.
I think that's safe right now, because I think like when we opened in 2014, it was obviously before COVID, and you know me, I hate the whole COVID name blame game. I can't stand it. But the fact of the matter is times are different. Like post COVID, everything skyrocketed. People's outlooks are different. Everything's completely different than it was before. So the challenges that we faced in 2014 aren't the same as the challenges that we would face in 2025.
Mic drop.
Bam.
Yep, all that's right. The truth. So that was good. I feel like that definitely can provide some value to anybody who's considering opening a salon.